Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, griefers, hope you're having an okay week on this slightly dreary January as ever. Just look, I know it's nearly out, and once it's out, I can stop banging on about it perhaps. But the book is out, You Are Not Alone, 19th of January. If you haven't pre-ordered it yet, please do. It's everything I've learned from the show. I'm really proud of it. I think it's a really good book. That's my sales pitch. I hope you like it. And pre-orders make a huge, huge difference. So if you've ever found the show useful or helpful or recommended it to someone, this would mean an awful lot to me if you could do a pre-order. The book launch has also moved. It's now on January the 19th at Waterstones Piccadilly in London. So if you're based in London, please do come along and listen to me and Fee Glover talking about life, death, grief, and everything in between. This week, I'm so excited to speak to such an amazing writer. I love talking to writers, I love talking to comedians, but yeah, she's a particularly interesting person. Her name is Lisa Tadeo. She's the author of the phenomenal Three Women, also Animal and Ghost Lover, which came out last year. You may have heard of Three Women. It was absolutely everywhere. It's an incredible, incredible book. She spent 8 years talking to three women about sex and desire and wrote it up. And it's extraordinary, really extraordinary book. But I was really grateful because she's so busy, Lisa. She's currently turning Three Women, Three Women into a show. But she spared some time to come and talk to me about her parents, Peter and Pia. So, Lisa, who are we remembering today?
My mother.
Your mother. And what was your mother's name?
Pia.
Pia? Oh, like P-I-A?
Yes.
Oh, I love that name. Was she Pia Tadeo, or is that your...
She was, she was Pia Tadeo, but she started off as Pia Lombardi.
Wow, this is a very glamorous name.
It is a glamorous name. She was 24. But she had a glamorous name and she was very beautiful. So yeah. It have those two things, but she was very poor.
So how did Pia die? What happened?
She had lung cancer.
Lung cancer. And how many years ago did she die?
2008.
2008. Oh, okay. So you're past the 10 years.
My dad is even longer. My dad was 2003.
Wow.
And I get embarrassed at how long ago it's been for what I still feel, which is obviously totally a societal, thing that we kind of do. I'll never forget when my dad died, finding out that I had like 3 days of bereavement. Like bereavement was just like 3 days, like. And it didn't matter like what level of person it was.
You is this like your job? So they just gave you 3 days bereavement for your dad's dying. Oh my God.
And it was like really an interesting feeling because I was so young and it was my first job out of college. And I remember thinking how harsh it was. And I mean, I also knew at the same time that my actual boss would have been fine.
Yeah.
If I had said I need more time, etc., like it would have been fine. So it's not like I felt strapped in that way. And I was still living with my, I could move back in with my mom. So like it was fine, but I did feel the pressure of, oh, if I had to keep working and had to go in and did not have the kind of benefit of knowing that if I did need more time or, you know, had to stop completely, that I would be supported by my mother. It was the first time I felt that sort of unique feeling of, oh, shoot, if you, sometimes you have to work even when you are like, you know, dying in pain. Mm. And so that's something that I think has really motivated me to want to be successful, because I'm really afraid of having to, like, I want to be able to just stop work at any time.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's it. I don't have to, which is actually quite, you know, not the best idea, because sometimes having to work is exactly the thing that saves you.
But yeah. Anyway,
so those are my long-winded response.
No, it's really interesting. And there's a campaign here at the moment to increase bereavement leave and to kind of like enshrine it and make it, you know, a thing. Because I think it's pretty discretionary at the moment, depending on the job. And It is this really strange thing of, like, their measurement of like 3 days. Yep, 3 days, a day to plan the funeral, day to have the funeral, day to cry, back to work. It's like 3 days for like a parent is a crazy number. Right. And to think that someone would be, and it's funny, isn't it? I think it's really interesting what you said of like, it's not like you kind of know, oh, if I had asked or if I'd gone into my boss and burst into tears, they would have said fine. But it's the fact that you're having to say, oh, by the way, what you thought was enough wasn't enough.
Yes.
Like, I have to call it, be like, you know how normal people have 3 days? This drama queen here, I need more. Like, it's
exactly,
it's putting that pressure on someone to say, oh, my grief is more than this.
Yeah.
And that, yeah, 3 days is nuts, isn't it? It's absolutely nuts. Why would anyone 3 days? I mean, don't feel embarrassed about length of time, because my dad died in 1998. So I'm like pre the millennium. And here I am still talking about it. So as we say on the show, like, it's not linear. Like, there's no time limit on these things. It's just you feel what you feel. And some days are better than others. And that's it, really. Yeah. What was your dad's name? Just because we didn't get that.
Peter.
Oh, Peter. Yeah. Wow. This like, I love it. Characters from a book. So were you, what happened with, because we spoke about Pia, first of all, with your mum, were you with her? Like, was it a long, was she ill for a very long time?
No, not very long. It went very fast once we found out, once she was diagnosed. But I think we caught it very late. It had already metastasized, and then it was like 6 months or so.
God.
And yes, I was with her for all of it, taking her to the hospital for chemo and radiation and caring for her at home. And it was really, really, really hard.
Yeah. Was she someone who talked about her illness and expressed her fears or anything like that?
When my father died, she sort of lost all will to live, which is why I believe she gave herself the cancer.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite close, isn't it? So you lost him 2003, did you say? And then 2008, yeah. That's, so yeah, 5 years between them. Gosh, that must have been hard for you.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
So, she did talk about it, but not in like a, she was not, I was in this sort of like, we can figure this out and fix it. And she was not interested in that sort of mindset. And I was angry at her for not wanting to do that.
Yeah.
But she didn't want to. And I mean, not that we didn't try stuff. We still tried stuff. Not like she declined, you know, treatment, but it was, you know, it was all like, when you're like, there's something uniquely weird about wanting someone to live who doesn't want to live themselves, and like, and then being angry at them for not caring more about being there for you. So yeah,
it's really God, that's like the last chapter in a parent-child relationship, isn't it? Because it's like you're stumping your feet being like, I'm still the child, and this person's like, well, I'm there's almost an acceptance there from her point of view, isn't it? Like, I know I'm not going to be around, I know this is what's happening, and it's
Yeah, it's really hard. I said on the show before, like, my dad was very young when he died, but he just refused to talk about it because he was in complete denial. He was like, I'm going to be fine. We were all like, you're not going to be fine. And cancer as well. And it's a real, that anger you feel. And again, I've talked about a lot of my anger. I mean, I was furious at him for dying, just furious, just like, how fucking dare you? Like, what is wrong with you? Like, I just, and it's such an, like you said, it's so irrational, but it doesn't dim it in any way. Like, it is just like such a primal fury at someone that they would do this to you, like, as if they had any choice. How did you deal? Oh, I don't want to jump ahead. Like, yeah, how did you deal with that anger with when she was ill as well? What was,
I guess at that point I'd expended so much of my feelings about my dad that by that point, even though I wanted her to want to live, I also was so exhausted with feeling the grief that like there was something that made it easier with her, that even though she was, I mean, my dad was like, you know, it's weird. It's like, I didn't love one more than the other. They were equally, you know, important to me in different ways. And she was important in a way that, you know, was very, I mean, just super primal for me. And I think that if I had lost her first, it would have been harder. In a sense, because I'd gone through my dad already, it was kind of like I was more ready for it, I guess. And I was exhausted by it. Yeah. And so the anger was almost more at exhaustion than rage.
Yeah.
Like this again.
Like, really? Yeah. Yeah.
Again, really. I have to, like, just the idea of, sometimes I only have one kid, and even though part of me would like another, the idea of doing all the sort of really boring, annoying things all over again is always what stops. I'm like, oh God, that whole period, doing that whole like sleepless nights again. Like, it's like, if I'm not going to learn, I mean, of course this is wrong and incorrect, and of course I would learn many new things because it would be a new person and a new experience, but I'm like, what am I? I'm not going to learn anything new from that. That's kind of how I felt with the death. I was just like, nothing is happening here except for more pain.
Yeah. I remember my husband has lost both his parents have died, and he lost his dad in his mid-20s. And I was kind of like, I got this, dead dads, I got this, no props. And then when his mom was sick, I remember that when he told me, I like physically ran away from him. I ran upstairs and I fell to the floor crying because I'm a bit extreme. And he tried to comfort me and like, as if I was upset, but it was because I knew we had to do it again. And I just felt this feeling of like, I can't, like, because she was sick and we just got the news, basically it's not, you know, there's nothing, it's cancer, you know, yeah, bad news, nothing we can do. And I just felt like, I completely relate to, I felt that feeling of like, you know, you're on a board game and like someone just picked you up and put you back to sleep, and you're like, no, like I've done it. Like, this isn't, it's not fair. You just want to scream. And I couldn't say it to him because obviously he was in the place where he was like, not even thinking about that, you know, the end yet. He was just dealing with the day to day.
How do you deal with the, it's not fair?
Yeah. I think it's such a cliche, and I think it's the incorrect cliche. So I think it's time, but I don't mean time heals and everything gets better. I think just it's a bomb blast, a death, and you keep walking further and further away, and then you can just see a bit more, and you can just kind of take in a bit more and be like, oh, okay, yeah, it's not fair, but also this thing, they had that life and I knew I loved them, and I knew that they loved me. And you walk a bit further, you're like, oh, other people don't get that. So they, although I feel like it's not fair, they also have that. I've got this. And you keep sort of walking back, but it takes, I mean, you know, I'm 20 plus years and I feel like I've just got to the point where I'm like, yeah, okay, that happened. And I wish, you know, like you said, I wish it was simpler and better and easier, and that I could say, oh, I did therapy for a year and now I'm fine. Like, but there just isn't a simple solution. And I compare it a lot to birth in that, you know, you have a kid and it's not like after a year, you're just great at doing it. Just like every day is a new challenge, and I have got two, and I will tell you, I agree with it. It's still boring the second time around. Like, oh no, not we just all potty training again. We did it once. Can't the other one teach the other one? So I think it's a mixture of therapy and time is what I found. But it is hard. It is really, really hard. And I think the loss of both parents is a really different situation. I know from my husband and my mum lost her mum and dad like within 2 weeks of each other. Similar, like my granny was like, I'm not living. Goodbye. And she was like, it's a really different feeling because you really are alone in the world. That's a very, you know, there's no backup. There's no net anymore. It's just you. Yep. And I remember my husband saying, it's really freeing. Because part of you is like, wow, I've got no approval I need to worry about.
Yeah.
But also I got no one to go, hey, guess what? Yeah. It's me too. How have you felt like you've dealt with it? It's not fair. Or is it just, you're still going?
I've turned so much of it into fear of it happening again.
Yes. Death anxiety.
That's what I need to work through more. I'm very, the idea of doing it again is just like, I won't do it. But that's obviously not how it works. And I don't want to live in a world where it's a possibility. I just can't, like, and I think, so I have a lack of acceptance, not so much of what happened with my parents, even though that's definitely part of it, but of that just being, not even the, it's not fair, but the, you know, just the fear of it. It's just too, because it's too big of a deal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. We call it on the show death anxiety. And, you know, once you've been through it, I don't know anyone. Yeah. I don't know anyone who after, you know, having a parent die or someone very close in their family is cool with death. Like, I think because it is like that thing of like, we got our hands burnt. And so you're like, don't bring the fire near me. Like, fuck you. And it's really, I don't know if you have this. I wrestle with it, but like, especially with my kids, you know, like it's like, well, now there's something really precious. Like, oh, for God's sake, like, what have I done? Like making yourself vulnerable to these things. Oh. And I've got better at catching it, definitely. But for years, it was just like, no, be on guard at all times. Because my dad got diagnosed in the February and he was dead by the April. So my brain just went, okay, the moment someone's got it, they're going to die. Like that's the truth.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to break out of that.
Yeah.
How long was your mum sick for then? Did you say it was about 6 months or?
Yes, 6 months.
6 months. And were you with her at like the very end?
Yes, through all of it. Yes, I was there every day and night. It was, it was a lot. It was just, and that's the other thing. It's like the being with the sort of waiting around for it to happen.
Mm.
And the knowing that like we're all marked right as it is, but having that sort of that extra marker put on just feels very, I don't know, just difficult.
Mm. Were you with her at the, you know, when she died, did you have a moment or anything? Like, we always talk on the show that there is no moment, but
I put towards like the last hour, whatever, I put her like hand over my head so that I could just feel it one more time.
Oh, that's such a beautiful thing to do.
I had to like physically, you know,
manipulate
her, which felt also very weird.
Yeah, It's that thing, isn't it, at the end of like the things you need. But again, it's that attention of the things you need and the things they can do. I'm sure she wouldn't have minded. It feels like
I don't think so.
Yeah, but, yeah.
But yes, it's still a weird, it's a weird thing.
Yeah, I don't know if it's weird. I think it's like that we don't talk about it, you know, yeah. Like we don't talk about, well, I needed to feel my mum's touch one more time, so I did this. And to no one, I don't think anyone would actually judge you for it. I think everyone would be like, yeah, I understand. I can empathize with that. But it's when you're doing these things, you feel sort of silly, don't you? Of like, what am I doing? But part of you still drives yourself into like, I need to do this. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that you did it, because my heartbreaking thing is when I talk to people who said, I wanted to, and I mm-hmm. didn't. I felt silly yeah. and I didn't. And that always to me is like, well, who would have known? No one yeah. would have known. Nurses yeah. have seemed much worse. Much stranger.
Totally.
Did you have to organize all the funeral and stuff by yourself? Is that like, and
I have a brother. He's 14 years older. So he had a full family by the time. His wife did a lot of the organizing of things for us. But yeah, I mean, I dragged my feet on literally every single part of getting headstones, everything that made it more real.
Yeah.
I tried to stop or at least delay. And I think I still kind of do that. I still feel like I still don't really accept it in a sense. And so, I mean, I accept it obviously, but putting energy into the memorialization of something that really just ruined my life is something I'm not interested in doing. So I'm like, and my brother is completely the opposite. He has like his entire house is basically a museum to our parents. Like it's a shrine, including the license plate from my father's car accident hanging.
Wow.
The ceiling like a decoration, like a chandelier. It was crazy. But he sees it in a different way, and like for him it's like a curation of memories. And I want to be able to do that, but I try to move away from it more.
I think siblings is like the most fascinating thing, because you know I do a podcast about it. My brother is always saying to me, I have an older brother as well, he's always like, don't know why are you like, he's like, I just feel I don't need to talk about it. It's just like, it's not like okay, it's just fine. And I always find it really interesting how different, you know, grief manifests and in the same, but as we said, like you are a different parent to different children, you know, you're different ages, all of this stuff, it makes it, well, lots of reasons of why you would react differently. But yeah, it's again, I interviewed the Mack twins, so twins, you know, like yeah. pretty similar upbringing, and they on the episode they talked about how differently they both grew. Like one of them just shut down, she was like playing Candy Crush for 6 months, didn't speak to anyone. The other one like organized, sorted everything out, and they were saying like they had this amazing conversation where they were like, they found it really hard to understand what the other one was doing and kind of yeah. be like, why aren't you stepping up? Why are you, you know? And it's just, I found that really interesting, because I was like, oh, even twins, like even yeah. pretty much the same upbringing. And it's just, you know, grief is, it's not like a pair of shoes you can, everyone tries on and it's like, oh, like this will all be fine. Size 5 will be fine. It's really an individual experience. So is that how your dad passed away? Was it in a car accident?
Yes.
Oh, God. That's a really shocking thing to experience, because obviously something yeah. is as sudden and brutal as that. Did you just get a phone call? Was it that kind of situation?
Yeah, phone call. He didn't pass away in that moment. He went to the hospital and he lived for 8 days, but never cognizant. And it was like a very every day was like touch and go ICU, so it was like 8 days of like panic and just an unthinkable thing that had somehow just happened.
And, you know, he was a doctor. So like we had to like sell his practice while he was in the hospital because.
Oh God.
It's only like, there were just like, there were things we had to do in order to like save the business and the sort of like, and it was just this, it was just, everything was just the most sudden, awful thing where like our entire lives changed in a matter of hours, really. And yeah, I had to, I remember the driving to the hospital to go and see him and just knowing, because he had not contacted me, that he was not going to be okay, you know.
It's like, now I know that, it's no wonder to me that you have death anxiety. Like when you experience something as shocking and sudden as that, I mean, like, you know, a cancer is sudden, but it's slower. It's not a phone call, you know, it's a series, as you know, with your mom, of like meetings and chats, and then very slowly you're like, oh, this person's dying. Whereas, yeah, interesting, that episode I was just talking about, the Mack twins, their dad died of a heart attack and they just got a phone call. And I think that's, you know, there's no, obviously there's no good or bad, no one wins in this competition, but getting just the phone call is, you're dealing with shock for so long. And I felt like I was in genuine shock for about 18 years. Like I honestly, and that's from a cancer death. Like, I just feel like you said earlier, which I think I wanted to like go, oh yeah, I feel the same. Like I knew he was dead. If someone had said he's come back, I would have been like, all right, yeah. Like it's the knowing and not knowing at the same, like sort of refusing to accept it. As you said, when you kind of pushing it over here into blinker area, so you can kind of live your life. You can see ahead of you, but over here, there's this fuzzy, somebody maybe died, but if we don't look too closely, maybe it's all fine. Like, because I think that's kind of shock, like your body goes into this, a way to protect you. And I think that's definitely what happened to me, of like my body was like, just don't think about it. It's just not possible for your brain to take that. And especially like you said, if you then have to sell and all that, like it is like someone flipping your world out completely overnight. So I can imagine by the time, yeah, you know, like you said, like your mom was ill, you were very done with this. Like, oh, life, like life coming along and giving you phone calls and lessons. And so, yeah, my God, your brother has the number plate. That's really interesting, isn't it? What, how people process things. And again, there's no right or wrong. It's, I completely understand that there's a ownership of having it, remembering it and honoring it. And there's another ownership of being like, no, thank you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd.
Do you find it hard to look at pictures of them now? Are you like, when you said the shrine, do you, as your house kind of like, are you not putting pictures up of them? And
yes and no. I go through phases where I like having pictures around, and then other phases where I can't deal with it. So yes, I'm right now, I'm in a sort of, mainly because I'm also changing around my office and stuff, so I just don't have, but I do, I have my own little shrine objects that I will put back, you know, into their rightful. I actually look forward to having a space to put things in, a to just change the way that I've been and to make it more, it's just that we've moved so much and I moved so much with three women and all that, that it was more, it was harder to kind of put, it's harder to put those sorts of roots down when you're moving around.
So did you start writing Three Women after all this had happened?
Yes. I mean, I definitely don't think that I would have been able to write a book about sex if my parents had been alive. So I definitely think, so to your husband saying something about it being freeing, there is the freeing aspect of it. It's the only thing that you can really you know, look at with a sense of like gratitude.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a freedom from ever having to have that fear again. Like if the worst thing has happened, the worst thing in that world happened, and so that's it. You don't need to think about it anymore.
Yeah, and that's the thing with the death anxiety, isn't it? It's like I remember thinking, well, at least he's not on my list. Like I don't have to worry about him dying. It's done. So the list is one person smaller. Phew. Yeah, I mean, if anyone hasn't read your amazing book, Three Women, it's interesting to me because it is such a all-consuming thing that you went through and moving, like you said, moving around so much that, like, yeah, after grief, then, or in grief, you can disappear into that situation and just disappear. Because I remember reading about, how you did it and how long you were sort of talking to people. I remember thinking, oh my God, like, this is... wow, like what a huge, huge thing to do. And do you feel like it was not motivated by grief, but do you feel like partly grief was fueling some part of that journey?
Yes, definitely. I think that it was one of the reasons that people were open to talking to me. It was fueling my desire to make other people feel less alone. So that's like, it just felt easier to concentrate on other people. I didn't want to look at myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I can relate to that a lot. the catchphrase for the show is "You are not alone." And that's like all I ever wanted to do was because I felt so alone.
Yeah.
And then it's that funny thing, isn't it? Like some people will say to me, oh, like it's you know, I don't, when you say you are not alone, it's so nice and you feel like so useful, and grief makes you feel so useless. And it's such a nice feeling. But at the same time, there's like 1% of it just is like, I didn't have anyone. Like, I wish I'd had a podcast that could have listened to. But obviously,
it's just like this is really an amazing resource to have. I wish I'd had this too. You know, I think it's like, it's really hard in our culture, you know, and definitely the US. I mean, I don't know exactly how the UK is different, but I assume it's not too different, but it's really, there aren't a lot of resources. They're not easy to find. And you kind of have to like, I don't know, you have to wade through a lot of stuff to like find things, I find.
Yeah.
Or you have to, it's a lot better now.
Yeah, it's a lot better. And there's a lot more stuff available. And I mean, obviously, you know, so I was like pre-internet when my dad died. So like, there was no, you know, I had one girl in my school year that had, her dad had died. And like, so we knew each other. But like, other than that, you just had no idea that this had happened to anyone else. And I think sometimes you can feel like what's happened to you is really weird. Like I thought for years, it was very strange that he had died, very like a strange thing had happened to us. And then actually, when I read other statistics of the type of cancer he had, I was like, oh, it's like one of the fifth most common cancers in the UK. Like why? But again, because people just don't, you know, weren't talking about death or cancer. It was all hidden up. And it is so much better. I mean, as ever, we got a long way to go. Did you seek therapy? I was just thinking as well, you're moving around. It's kind of hard to do that as well.
I did. That's exactly right. I thought I would see a different therapist every time I moved.
Oh, okay.
For the first couple of weeks that I had moved to a new place, I would continue speaking to the former therapist on the phone if they were, from a different town or state. But to be perfectly honest, I never found somebody like really, really great. None of the people were good enough for me to kind of to continue calling, which is why I didn't mind finding new people in every place that I went. Therapy, it never really helped me. And I don't think that's because therapy can't help. I think it's because I never found the right combination of therapist and sort of type of therapy. I also, part of what I had and then also developed more of after my parents' deaths was OCD. And a lot of the OCD is like kind of related to hypochondria or fearing, you know, that sort of death anxiety that you were talking about. But for me, it manifests in OCD and sort of like the looping thoughts of it. So, you know, I've kind of more recently found out that I have OCD, and that's how it manifests for me. So I don't know. I know there's exposure therapy and stuff like that. I guess, and this is going to be a, you know, very silly thing to say, but I'm so busy work-wise that opening the can of worms, like dismantling the sort of patch together, person that I've made myself into as, and having a child that I have to sort of consider. I lost my parents when I was single and not a parent, I like did yoga like twice a day. I walked all around Manhattan. I took care of my grief, you know, and that's, you know, it still took me a long time and I still didn't fully get over it, but I was doing or trying to live. And I don't have the benefit of that sort of time anymore. And I do remember from that time that opening myself up in that way and trying to like heal was incredibly disruptive. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, having had money from selling my parents' house and having the ability to stay afloat without being too desperate about it made me able to survive in a way that I always think about, like, you know, how awful it is for people who did not have the luck that I had had.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that weird thing, isn't it? Like there's a joke here of like, if someone buys a house in London, it's like, oh, are their parents rich or did their parents die? It's like, that's surely how you can afford it. And that weirdness about, yeah, like it, that lifeline that your parents can still throw you, which, you know, obviously is reflective, dependent on their privilege and your privilege and all of those things that come before us. Do you think, I'm just asking as someone who also likes to fill their time a lot, do you think like there's a part of you that is like keeping the work going so the box stays closed? Like, is there a part that's like, if I keep going, then I don't notice the box because I'm so busy?
Yeah, maybe. I think it's more towards like, let me do as much as I can and, you know, get sort of as stable as possible before the inevitable shoe drops and I have to just, you know, spend all of my earned resources on, you know, figuring out how to save this person's life or my own, or I don't know. It's all I think about. It's not like everything I do is motivated by that fear.
Yeah, when you were saying about, obviously I can relate to the looping thoughts and the OCD, and because both my husband and I both lost parents to cancer. So like, my friend was really shocked. I thought this was normal. So I told my friend, like, anything, a creak, a bump, we're like, do you think it's cancer? And she was like, it would never occur to me. And I was like, wow, is it not the first thing you think? And her parents, she had quite, it was fine, but her parents got divorced. And she was like, anything that happens, I think we're going to get divorced. And I was like, oh, never occurs to me. I was like, I'm just on cancer watch all the time. And then we drive each other crazy because we both lost parents to cancer. So we're like, yeah, it could be, couldn't it? I don't know. I think she goes to the doctor. And we have to kind of talk each other down because it's like our learned experience is this very weird, you know, both his parents died of cancer. My dad says 3 out of 4. You're like, oh God, the statistics aren't great, guys.
No, so
it's hard not to go down there. And I remember I eventually found a therapist who was really great. And it took a long time. And I remember her saying to me once, you know, not everyone dies of cancer. And I was like, yeah, but somebody did. Somebody did. And she was like, yes, but think of the people who haven't. I was like, yeah, but this one time, it's like, you know, it's like saying, oh, you know, not all chilies are hot. You're like, yeah, but the one I ate burnt my mouth, so I'm not going to eat them again. And to be fair, not all chilies are as hot as other chilies.
Right. But that's the thing. It's like when I would find someone who said something like that, I would just be like, this person hasn't. There was just a people who have not lost people and or there's people who have lost people and don't have that same fear. Which is fine and great for them, but I have a hard time understanding how they can understand me having not suffered it, in a sense. And you know, I know that that's not exactly fair, but that's something I do think. You know, I do feel like it's almost like something I would probably look for in a future therapist. It's the lived experience of it.
Yeah, I definitely, when I would try people like dating, if I sensed for a second that they didn't get it, they weren't in the club, I found it impossible. Like, and I still find it hard, and I would still say, oh, they're not in the club, like they don't get it, like when I'm talking about something. And because, you know, as soon as somebody's in the club, when you're talking about your feelings and they get it, it's just a different, it's just such a different experience. And the therapist I found who was great, like she was like a very professional therapist, so she like never revealed anything about herself, but I think I could tell she's in the club, she got it. And then also what I liked, because I know what you mean, is I could tell that she hadn't had thoughts that I had, but she took them very seriously. And that was the first time I'd had that, as someone being like, yeah, that makes sense. This awful thing happened. It was awful. Because I spent so many years diminishing it. Like, oh, it was years ago and everybody people died of cancer. What's the big deal? Why am I so upset? And she just kept saying, no, that sounds really awful. I kept thinking, oh, it's nice to have someone just agree with the feelings, because you're arguing with the feelings all the time. And that's so exhausting. It's such a tiring place to be.
It is.
We're fine, guys. We want to know. Hashtag we're fine. It's just as tiring. How do you feel now about like the anniversaries? Do you notice them or mark them? Or
I do. I notice them. I notice them, and I feel my brother will always say something also. So even if I wasn't sort of, I notice them. I try to not. They're not as bad. They used to be really awful. I used to like dread the entire month of September, which is my favorite month. I used to dread it because it was when my father died. I didn't have as much pain around the birthday as the death day. That for me became very, or not even the death day, but the accident day, because that was really the day that my world was completely, you know, like that sort of the phone call of it is really the, you know, and I was also primed to have a sort of phone call issue, because when my mom, my dad had diabetes, and when we found out he had diabetes, it was like, he called my mom and told her on the phone, and she was very like dramatic about it. And like sort of like clutched the table, like, and it was what was bad about it was that, you know, my dad had a history of heart disease in his family, et cetera. And the diabetes thing was, but in and of itself, it wasn't cancer, you know, it wasn't awful stuff. And so, but my mom treated it as though it were. And I mean, and partly because she didn't have a lot of medical understanding, and the word to her being from a different country, diabetes, you know, it's a terrible word. I think watching her reaction to it was very like, oh, this is, so something's bad. But it was also that my father, who was somebody who was utterly the rock in our family, was penetrable or porous, was the thing that kind of was debilitating. And I think that sort of second phone call, it just kind of like, I lived my life in between those two phone calls, in a sense. And then the second one came, and I was like vindicated, and I was right. And so I also go through life with a certain amount of like, I can see the future, you know, I know things that other people don't know, and everybody should listen to me. If I'm afraid, then we should all stay home for a full 2 weeks.
I have had to be talked down several times, with my husband being like, you don't know. I've got a bad feeling. I don't think we should do this. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's taken me a long time to be like, you have a fear. You don't know the truth. It's a fear. And, you know, but it's hard. It's seeking control when the control has been taken from you, especially when it's something sudden like that. It's like your body is just trying to pin things down and make things stable, because it's like, something came along. And we described it actually on a lot of other episodes of like the magician's tablecloth trick. Like, it's like someone's whisked that tablecloth away and everything is sort of in the same position, but not quite. And so you're feeling like that could happen at any time. So I need to be like clinging onto this tablecloth, like no one's going to do that. And yeah, it's really hard. It's really hard not to feel that faith in your, yeah, like you said, in like seeing the truth or knowing things, because the world is fucking scary. Like, it's really scary. And I tried to take that to heart, what that therapist said, of like, every time I'd be freaking out, I'd be like, count the people who haven't died, like just count them in your head. And that, you know, eventually I was like, okay, it is a lot. It's a lot more.
Is that your therapist's tool? Was that the therapist's suggested tool?
No. I just thought, because she kept saying to me, well, you know,
yeah,
like it's only one person. And I was so, because it annoyed me so much, I was like, okay, well, I guess you hit that point where like, well, I'm so fed up of thinking everyone's going to die at every single moment. And I was like, okay, go through and think about it. Like, here's all the people who didn't get cancer or had a disease and are okay. And actually it's kind of, yes, there's the people who died and the people who live, but actually it's not, you know, you're not living in a situation where it's medieval times and cholera has come to your village. Like, you're not living like in that, but it's very easy to understand why your body might feel like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you start reading everything about anxiety and all that stuff about, you know, the brain in fear mode and what it does, like, it makes you very irrational and it makes you feel like, you know everything and you've got to be safe and no, you know, you're not protected. And it's harder. I did a lot of like breath work. Like, that's the other thing I tried to do, is like, just the
I need to do that. That's,
yeah.
It's a lot about that.
What is it? It's like the parasympathetic nervous system. And I'm probably saying that wrong, but if you literally breathe out longer than you breathe in.
Oh, okay.
Like, as simple as that. Like, so you breathe in for 4, you breathe out for 8, which is also what they tell you to do in labor. And it's like, childbirth.
Oh, labor. Sorry.
Labor. Sorry.
I was like, neighbor, is that like a people with OCD?
That's my London accent. Labor. And I found that quite helpful because it does work. Like, it does make your brain take a step back from that part of your brain that's like, everyone's going to die. Get out of the room now. Like, if you just breathe out longer than you're breathing in, your brain starts going, I don't think they are going to die. Sorry. I don't know why I said that. Like, and then you can kind of have this like, but it's, you know, it's not easy. And I think this is the thing with grief, isn't it? It's every day. It's like a process. It's not. And I think we're constantly hoping that, you know, you'll reach the end and it'll be fixed and everything will be okay. But it's, unfortunately, it's slightly more complicated than that. And sadly, they made humans more complicated. And I really understand and empathize with you with, like you said, your dad's anniversary, because that really was a before this moment, after this moment, like, here is the turning point in that character's story. Like, there you go. Everything changed. And I think there's nothing wrong in acknowledging that, like, that's very difficult. So are they buried? Is that what happened? Or
they are, they're buried in New Jersey near my home. And what's funny is my husband was like, maybe we should bring them here, like, to, you know, our house, like, see it. And like, that was a very weird thing for me, because they are buried and I can't imagine. I mean, this is going to be really gothic and frightening and insane, but I would want to open. I know. But that's part of the OCD too, is that like desire to like, oh, well, let me see it. Like, why can't I? Maybe I would like it. How do I know I wouldn't like, you know, like something like that. So, Sorry, so that was probably more than.
No, it's fine. It's totally fine. I completely got it. That's, yeah. I would be really, I'd feel quite conflicted about that as well.
Yeah.
Because I think it's if you have, also, do you know what? It's a terrible combination of an overactive imagination, which clearly you have because you're a writer, being creative with that overactive imagination, trauma. And then you're like, let me imagine all the terrible things. Like, it's just like so powerful. And I used to sometimes think, God, I wish I just couldn't imagine these things. But it's like so fast, like a Netflix horror show, like immediately in my brain. So yeah, I can relate to being like, ooh, like, oh God. Lisa, it was so nice to talk to you. I don't want to keep you too long.
This has been absolutely lovely, and I am
good.
I'm so grateful.
No, it was so nice, and that's so nice to remember Peter and Pia. My dad was Peter as well, so that's
oh God,
easy for me. Yeah. And you don't get many these days, so it's it's always nice when you have Peter. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kariya.
You can find more information about Lisa at www.lisatadeo.com. That's TADDEO.com. She's on Twitter at Lisa D Tadeo, and obviously her books are available to buy from all good bookstores. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The book is available to pre-order now. You Are Not Alone is out January the 19th. I'd hugely appreciate it if you find you're able to do that. Sorry for going on about it so much. The show was recorded remotely. It's edited by Kate Holland. Music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. Stop motion animation is provided by Alice Loveday. And remember, you are not alone.